Surprise! You may be seated. Surprise, I learned, is one of humanity's six basic emotions. By definition, it occurs anytime that we're wrong and our brain tells us about it. When we're surprised by a priest hiding behind a pulpit, our bodies actually freeze for 1/25th of a second and begin what one researcher refers to as the surprise sequence. In this sequence, first, our cognitive resources are hijacked and pulled into the moment, telling us something important is happening right there, and I need to pay attention. Second, the brain tells us, figure out what's happening. And third, our perspective changes. What we thought would happen didn't happen. Now, our emotions initiate that change. Studies show that whatever you're feeling about the surprise intensifies up to 400%. So if the surprise delighted you, then you just might feel 400% happier. And if the surprise bothered you, well, you might feel 400% unhappier. The percentage correlates to your level of expectation. If it was the last thing you expected, your emotional response is more intense. But if you were given some clues, your emotional response may have been less intense. In today's reading from the Acts of the Apostles, the Holy Spirit surprises Peter and his friends. Our text says they were astounded. Here's what happened. God had just given Peter a vision of a bunch of animals that Jews are not allowed to eat. And in that vision, God said to Peter, "Go ahead and eat them. What I've made clean, don't call unclean." Peter is confused, not understanding what God means. And as the vision concludes, some people arrive at Peter's door, and they tell him, "Hey, there's a Gentile man named Cornelius who says he wants to meet you." Why? Well, because God just gave Cornelius a vision about Peter. So curious to what God is doing, Peter takes some of his Jewish friends with him to Cornelius' house. Now, this is an unclean Gentile household, and the Jews enter it with what I imagine is an uncomfortable glance at the dinner table. This is where our story picks up in today's reading. Peter begins preaching the good news of Jesus when mid-sentence, whoosh, the Holy Spirit shows up. The Gentiles begin speaking in tongues just like the Jews did at Pentecost. The Greek text says that the Jews are absolutely flabbergasted, beside themselves, 400% brain explosion. At this point, see, to become a follower of Jesus, a person had to first become Jewish. Only Jews could be Christians. Only Jews were eligible for the empowerment of the Holy Spirit. That's why the Jews were surprised, because God's Spirit did something other than what they expected. God made Gentiles Christians too. Now remember, those who expect a surprise aren't as emotionally affected as the others, and God had given Peter that vision about unclean things being made clean. So while everyone else is stunned frozen, Peter is the first to try to change his perspective. He sounds a bit unsure of himself, but he says something like, "I guess we should baptize them." And so the household is baptized. Today's text ends with Peter and the other Jews spending a few nights in Cornelius' house, quite possibly eating some pork and shrimp fried rice, sleeping in mixed woolen bed sheets. Or at least, that's what all the Jews back in Jerusalem were assuming was happening. See, Jews couldn't mix with Gentiles because Gentiles mixed too many things. Nothing they did was kosher. Nothing they did was the way the Jews do things. So regardless of what did happen, this would likely have been an uncomfortable sleepover for the chosen people. Now, unless you're a vegetarian or allergic, you've probably had a shellfish or pork dinner. You've probably slept in somebody else's bed sheets that weren't quite your style. These aren't strange occurrences for us Gentiles. Ritual defilement isn't really a part of our culture, but we do share some of our thinking in common with the Jews in this story. Namely, zero-sum thinking, where one person's loss is another person's gain. The reason the Jews didn't expect Gentiles to become Christians is because, well, if you're the chosen people, then everyone else can't be. And according to Pew Research Center, Americans think this way about our politics. Both Trump and Biden supporters say that if the other wins the next election, it would result in lasting harm to the country. The stats are almost identical, with 89% of Trump supporters claiming concern if Biden is elected, and 90% of Biden supporters claiming concern if Trump is elected. 90% is almost the entire party. Americans may not be arguing over bedsheets and shellfish, but in our politics, we come pretty close to arguing which side is made up of the chosen people. According to an article published by the University of Florida's Law School, I quote, a zero-sum mindset can lead to undesirable results, both because it can make disputes harder to resolve, and because people holding such beliefs are more likely to get into conflicts to begin with. Over the past several decades, legal educators specializing in dispute resolution have worked hard to challenge that mindset. The task is not simple, for framing conflict in zero-sum terms has very deep cultural roots, tracing back at least to the biblical stories. End quote. Even legal history is aware of the Bible's zero-sum mindset. And science confirms that this way of thinking is ancient. Some scientists call it a legacy of human evolution. All animals operate as if the world is zero sum. This psychological adaptation allows us to compete for resources like mates, food, and status when they're scarce. Economists tell us that zero sum is still the default way that human beings think about resources, even when they're not scarce. Ecologists say zero-sum thinking is why we are in a climate crisis. We maintain a mindset of scarcity. What's good for the planet won't be good for me. When it comes to zero-sum, you and I aren't much different than Peter and his friends. In fact, an American parable based on today's story in Acts might sound something like this. Imagine with me that you and your closest friends are at your regular hangout spot. You're all friends because, well, you see the world in similar ways. You get each other spiritually, socially, politically. And it is an election year. So as you all commiserate on your similar values, you notice the house across the street from you, well, it has political signage all over the yard. Signage from the party least like your own. Red or blue signs screaming alternative ways of seeing the world into your eyeballs. Now picture this. Your best friend is there, the person you most respect for many reasons, but especially spiritually. Maybe you go to church together. You trust their relationship with God. Now imagine your friend takes their last bite of a well-enjoyed meal and says to you, catch you later, gotta go to a party. And they pull out a hat matching the political signage across the street, place it on their head, and walk into that house. I bet your body would freeze for at least 1/25th of a second. Mine would. You might not just feel surprised, but panicked. Confidence in your best friend shattering to bits with each step. Surely you're missing something? Is your friend misguided? What's happening here? Certainly God doesn't approve of this. Level 400 brain explosions, right? Well, if you're now feeling just a little bit flabbergasted, you're feeling something of what it was like for Peter and the Jews, what they were feeling in Acts 10. And Acts 11, this next chapter, begins exactly how I imagine the night after that political party might go, with Peter leaving Cornelius' house, walking across the street to Jerusalem, to his friends, who all look at him like he's grown a second head. "What were you thinking?" they ask him. Acts 11 says, "Why did you eat with those people? How could you betray us like that? How could you sleep in the enemy's bed?" Acts 11 says that Peter began to contend with his friends. The Greek word here means both to judge and to doubt. Peter, who heard the voice of God in a vision, heard the voice of the Holy Spirit speaking from the mouths of Gentile tongues, and watched an entire household willingly baptized into the way of Jesus, wrestles with his experience as soon as his friends start to question him. He wavers between doubting himself and doubting his friends for the same reasons that we would. Because zero-sum mindset requires it. Someone always has to be right and someone always has to be wrong, and that's the only way that it can be. There will always be a loser in zero-sum thinking, and we never want it to be us. So Peter, he begins to defend himself. He tells his friends everything that happened, the visions, the tongues, the baptism, the food, and he finishes by remembering something Jesus once said. "John baptized with water, but you will one day be baptized with the Holy Spirit." And he realizes all along it was God who orchestrated this. If God poured out her Spirit upon the Gentiles, Peter says to his Jewish friends, who am I to go against God? And with these words, Acts says that all the Jews in the room fell silent. I imagine they were frozen with surprise too. Remember that surprise sequence that I talked about? We freeze. We figure out what's really going on here, and then we change our perspective. I bet Peter's friends all wondered, did Jesus know this would happen? He told them that the Holy Spirit would be their comforter and their advocate, and I'm sure they didn't feel very comforted or advocated for in that moment. But I think that's exactly what the Holy Spirit was doing, supporting them in ways that they didn't yet know how to support themselves. In Acts, the Holy Spirit uses one of humanity's basic emotions, surprise, to help us evolve, to bring us out of this zero-sum mindset and into a new way of thinking. In Romans, the Apostle Paul reflects on Gentiles becoming Christians using a metaphor about an olive tree. He says that Gentiles are like this wild olive shoot grafted onto a cultivated Jewish tree. He said that God did this thing contrary to nature. If humanity is ever going to let go of zero-sum thinking, we will need an act contrary to nature too. We will need God's help. Lawyers, politicians, economists, environmentalists, they're all saying that the quality of our lives and the life of our planet require human beings to evolve out of zero-sum thinking now. And from all these different philosophies and perspectives, they offer a similar alternative, what's being called positive-sum thinking. A positive-sum mindset assumes that the total gains will be greater than zero. That means instead of one party walking away with everything, each party walks away with something. Sounds reasonable. When parties begin with this assumption of positive sum, they choose integrative solutions instead of conflict. Different interests are negotiated so that everyone's basic needs are met. An example of positive sum politics might be recognizing that immigration improves workers' lives while increasing the number of jobs available in the economy. In economics, it's the realization that wealth creates more resources for everyone, not just for the 1%. If everyone is fighting over the same small pie, instead of taking a bigger bite, use your resources to make a bigger pie. A prominent tech journalist recently predicted that the world's first trillionaire will probably be a green tech entrepreneur. It's this generation's hope and dream that future wealth will be to create technology that allows us to coexist with our planet rather than destroy it. There was a long moment of silence after Peter reminded the Jews that Jesus promised to baptize people with the Holy Spirit. When they remembered, Jesus said he'd make Christians in a new way. But when that silence broke, it was with shouts of joy and praise, glorifying God. The Jewish Christians realized that Gentile inclusion didn't diminish their Judaism. Instead, it expanded everyone's understanding of God's grace. God found an integrative solution, a way to include Gentiles into the chosen people without pushing the Jews out. And not only did the household of God begin growing exponentially from this time forward in the book of Acts, but Peter made some new friends and got to experience some food and practices of another culture, things he never dreamed possible. Positive sum thinking expanded everyone's understanding of God and of each other. And I wonder what might happen if we allowed God to change our zero-sum mindsets into positive-sum thinking. I imagine the Holy Spirit might advocate for us in a similar way than she did in the first century. She might use surprise to get our attention too, to help us freeze our current zero-sum mindset and change our perspective. Remember, by definition, surprise is your brain's way of telling you that you were wrong. So, the next time you find yourself truly surprised, listen for the Holy Spirit. She just might be inviting you into something brand new.